eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Joined now here on the flagship podcast by the one and only Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby, who has been going about 100 miles an hour. I mean, it's not just what's going on with the Big 12. It's what's going on with all of college football. As a member of the four-person working group that came up with the proposal for a 12-team college football playoff. Of course, we got some name, image, and likeness about to come on board in the state of Texas in about a week. Commissioner, how are you holding up these days?
Well, I'm doing fine. There are some things that I'm spending time on that are not particularly enjoyable, but the college football playoff is one thing that is has been a long and arduous process, but I think is coming to a productive close. I think it's going to be good for the college football enterprise. I think the opportunity for participation is going to be excellent. And so, you know, that part of it is, has been a labor of love. I think in the midst of finding ourselves in court and finding ourselves with a need to make modifications to our rules and all of the many things that are going on, there's also some things that you can look at and say, gee, we're actually making some progress.
Well, I call you the voice of reason in college athletics because you're very measured. You look at everything, you make solid, decisions. And I think you also, through the whole COVID-19 pandemic, I thought you did a brilliant job. And then you turn around and here comes the college football playoff expansion. A lot of folks thought it would be 8. The proposal would be to go to 8 teams for a college football playoff. Why did the proposal come out with 12?
Well, I think that's probably the seminal question that has been asked of us. And when you began to overlay a need or a belief that more teams needed to participate, and that four, I think we all acknowledge, is clearly superior to all of the predecessors, the Alliance and the BCS and all of the others. I think the human selection process is clearly superior to the computers or the blended polls and those kinds of things. Those are all things that we looked deeply at and just determined that we had really done some things right on it. On the other hand, when you look at 8, and if you believe that there's an opportunity to, or perhaps a necessity, to provide more participation opportunities, all of a sudden you get to the point where you say, well, are we going to have 6 automatic qualifiers and 2 at-larges? That just didn't seem like it was enough. You could certainly look at it and say, well, the A5 has brought most of the value to the college football playoff. Let's go with the 5 A5s and 3 at-larges, or maybe 5 and the highest ranked group of 5. it didn't seem right that we would have automatic qualifications. This needs to be an eat what you kill environment, and it needs to be based on strength of schedule and the like. And so we pretty well got ourselves to the point where we wanted to value conference championships, and that's evident in the model. But we also wanted to make sure that those who had earned it had a crack at getting into the playoff. And so eight just didn't seem like enough, and 16 seemed like too many. And the more we began to delve into it, the more viable it became, and the more we liked the structure and how it could be set up. You know, the real magic in 12 is that, you know, for the four highest ranked conference champions, if they play all the way to the national championship game, they're only going to play one more game than they would have played otherwise. The only way that you get some of the big numbers that have been noted is if you're a low seed and you've lost in your conference championship game and you play all the way to the championship game. That is fairly unlikely to happen, but you know, it will happen some year. So 12 just seemed like the right balance of access and valuing of conference championships and looking at ways particularly to enhance the regular season. I think, you know, with 6 weeks to go in the season, there'll be 35 or 40 teams that have a legitimate claim to be in the playoff. And with 3 weeks to play, they'll probably be 20 or 25. And so that's good for in-stadium attendance. That's good for fans. It's good for TV. It's going to bring a lot of interest to the second half of the regular season. And I think all of those were best accomplished with the 12-team model.
I thought if we ever got to double-digit teams in a playoff, we would see some part of the regular season go away, or maybe the conference championship games go away, because there is a potential for student-athletes to play 17 football games under the 12-team model. Does that need to happen, Commissioner? Do we need to do away with one of the non-conference games? Do we need to shorten up somewhere?
Well, you know, there's always a lot of talk about that. And as you know, Chip, I was chair of football oversight for a number of years. And we talked about the regular season. We talked about whether or not we wanted to build two byes into the season. And in order to do that for everybody, you would have to start the season a week earlier. And we kind of revisited that conversation in conjunction with the playoff. And, you know, the challenge with the moving the season a week earlier is you start with preseason camp, some schools would be the 20th of July, and that seemed pretty early, and it shortens the summer significantly. I think that there can be a conversation about whether 12 games is the right number of games. I think programs like ours in the Big 12 have gotten highly reliant on being able to play seven home games, sometimes eight home games, and that revenue is vital to their financial stability. So, you know, I think while it's a good academic discussion to have, being able to walk away from a full game revenue is easier said than done. But I think over time we'll look at it. But I think, you know, that's one of the beauties of this. I don't believe that the 12-team model weakens the regular season. I think, on the contrary, it greatly strengthens the regular season and keeps a lot of people close to the flame. Now, it's a fair question to ask, what does it do to the postseason? Does it hurt some of the traditional bowl games that have been around? Well, you know, right now we don't know what bowls will be involved in the playoff, and we'll be talking with lots of them over the next 3 or 4 months to determine the feasibility of it. But the fact is, there are a lot of bowl games, and it's a good thing for players and coaches and institutions to play in the postseason. But, you know, there also are a lot of the bowl games that are not strong financially and are not, you know, greatly anticipated. They don't have long traditions and the like. And so it's not clear exactly what will happen with some of the bowl architecture. But we certainly have made the decisions with those thoughts in mind. And there's some of it that's just going to have to play itself out.
The top four conference, the top four seeds are the highest rated conference champions. Does that eliminate Notre Dame from ever being a top four seed? Jack Swarbrick was in your working group. How did those conversations go? Jack Swarbrick, of course, the athletic director at Notre Dame.
Yeah, well, Jack was very, I think all of us worked hard to put our conference hats at the door. And in Jack's case, you know, he has a unique relationship with the ACC and particularly unique last year since they played a conference season. But they value their independence, and he went into it with his eyes wide open. We all said we think it's a big deal to have played through the season, to have played a lot of games against the best competition in your league, and to have come out as the champion. And, you know, it's in all of our cases, we're going to have a conference championship game at the end of the year that's going to say, okay, this is who the trophy is going to go to. And all of that is good. That is difficult to do. And Notre Dame isn't going to do that. They have chosen to not participate as a conference member. And, you know, Jack, to his credit, has taken some heat over it. And yet he said, hey, listen, we're not playing a conference championship. We're not playing a conference schedule. And we're doing that of our own volition. And that's just one of the things that goes along with it. Now, there were some comments from him just yesterday where he was saying, yes, but remember, we've had our challenges getting into the playoff, having to be almost undefeated as a practical matter to get into it. And now with 12 slots and 6 at-large slots, if Notre Dame's ranked anywhere in the top 10, 11, 12, they're very likely to be in the playoffs. So in terms of annual access, I think it's a better situation for Notre Dame. Are they going to get the benefit of that bye in the first round? No, they're not, because they're not going through the same ordeal during the season that those that have won conference championships have. So, you know, there's a trade-off there, but I think in terms of frequency of access, this is a good thing for Notre Dame.
We will take a quick break here in the Flagship Podcast with Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby. We'll come back and ask him about how quickly he thinks this expanded college football playoff will happen. We'll do that next right here on the Flagship Podcast.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Commissioner, 23 appears to be the earliest we could see the 12-team expanded college football playoff. Is that your anticipation that we see it in 23? How agreeable do you think, or take us through all the steps that it'll take to make this happen?
Well, to be clear, I don't think anybody forecast 23. I think some of your colleagues in the Fourth Estate took a comment from Bill Hancock in which he said, well, it's not likely to happen in the next year or two. And so that from that, they extrapolated 23.
They started rubbing their hands together.
You know how those things happen. But I don't think anybody necessarily forecast that it was going to happen in 23. We're going to take the next 4 months, and maybe it's 5 months, maybe it's 6 months, but we have CFP board meetings in September and again in January. And there's a lot of moving parts in this. We manage the CFP essentially by unanimous consent. So if there's one of the signatories or a couple of the signatories, the 10 conferences in Notre Dame, to this deal, it could get sideways. Now we haven't run into any of those things just yet. But as has been said, the devil is in the details. And so the next 6 months or thereabouts is going to be an exploration process. We have to go back and talk to our TV partners at ESPN, and we are having those conversations in a rapidly changing media environment. The migration to digital carriage is much more rapid than it was forecast to be. The cable universe is shrinking rapidly, more rapidly than it was forecast to shrink. So, you know, we're going to have to talk with them, and we're going to have to ascertain what their bandwidth is, because we're talking about going from 3 games to 11 games. And it's not a small change. And it's especially complicated to do it around an expanding NFL schedule, because we're not going to put games in direct conflict with the AFC and NFC championship games and the like, as an example. So there's a lot of media stuff to go through. We also have partnerships with our New Year's Six bowls, and we have to go back to them. They in the case of the Big 12 and the SEC, we have a contract with the Sugar Bowl where we're signatories to the television contract, and it's a very large contract. It's tens of millions of dollars. And similarly, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have contract with the Rose Bowl for the same thing. We have structured this so that we have some of our traditional bowl partners on New Year's Day and with quarterfinal games. And so we've tried to respect the bowl environment, but we've also struck a balance with some games on campus. And so, you know, it's got a lot of moving parts, Chip, and we don't want to try and shove a 10-pound ham down a funnel. We want to include our partners. We want to value their contribution and their traditions, but we also have a desire to get this done and to make it work. And so, aspirationally, our board is going to have another crack at it in terms of approving it. And if we come back and say, well, here's the deal, and there are elements of it that people don't like, then, you know, we may or may not get there. I think what has come out of our meetings is that we think the 12-team model is a good model. We may be able to do it preemptively, and we don't know yet about the feasibility of all of those aspects. And we'll go through the process. And if it turns out that it's not doable in the near term, 23, 24, whenever before the end of the contract, then I think what you'll see is we'll probably stay relatively committed to the 12-team model, but we won't implement it until the end of the contract. And so, you know, we just don't know on those things yet.
When you look at the financial impact of the expanded playoff, do you have an idea of what it would mean specifically to the Big 12 in terms of per school payout increase?
Obviously we've done some work around that. There's a couple of components to it. One, these things are only worth what somebody will pay you for it. And in a changing media environment, who knows what that will be. We'll have to see, and we'll have to go through negotiations. And yes, I've done some forecasting around a number of different scenarios, and no, I'm not prepared to share those with the public right now. I'm sure that's not going to surprise you very much.
Well, I had to try. Commissioner, talking to Commissioner, Big 12 Commissioner Bob Boolsby, and the, you know, obviously name, image, likeness is set to go in the state of Texas, where the law goes into effect July 1st. The NCAA still, as of this moment, we don't have clear guidelines from the NCAA about what their member schools should be thinking about in terms of NIL as these laws start to go into effect. What is this? Do you feel like this is the Wild West? I mean, kids are talking about starting GoFundMes, OnlyFans, Twitch accounts. I mean, what's allowed, what's not allowed? Can you regulate this, Commissioner?
Well, I mean, first of all, when you think about regulation, we have lots of them. And some institutions adhere to them carefully. Some institutions conspire to circumvent the rules, and others, the vast majority, do the right things at the right time, and they know what this is about. This is about drawing a bright line between the student athlete's life as a student athlete, their education, room, board, books, tuition and fees, and full cost of attendance, and you know that's the environment in which you work. And if you want to be a professional athlete, there's a place you can go and be a professional athlete, but it's not college. On the other hand, there's an acknowledgement in the changes in the NIL rules that student athletes have some inalienable rights to their own name, image, and likeness. And you know, if they want to promote the fact that they're giving tennis lessons and getting paid for it, they ought to be able to do that. They ought to be able to go out and make speeches for compensation. They ought to be able to make appearances. They ought to be able to run summer camps. An offensive lineman ought to be able to sell a package online that tells high school aspiring offensive linemen what to eat and how to train and those kinds of things. There's lots of stuff that is appropriate that they ought to be able to do. Where it gets dicey is in the social media environment and making sure that there is appropriate payment for appropriate involvement and that the institution is not involved in making those arrangements. And those that do it right will not be involved in those things. They won't be brokering deals for kids, but they'll be helping them to learn about financial sustainability and proper business management and how you file your taxes and what kinds of things you can do and you can't do. I mean, there's a lot of educational things that the schools can do or a third party can do on behalf of the schools. One of the things that student athletes are going to be able to do is they're going to be able to have representation. They'll be able to have an agent working with them that's out working every day to help them promote. But, you know, the thing that has to be remembered is there's going to be a very few student athletes that make a lot of money. There's going to be quite a few that make a little bit of money. And then there's going to be some that just aren't willing to work hard enough at it to make any money or don't perhaps have the profile to make any money. So, you know, we thought it was going to be the end of the world when we had fueling stations because we couldn't decide whether you could have cream cheese on your bagel or not. And we thought it was the end of the world when we went to full cost of attendance because there would be differences between schools. And indeed there are. In our league, we have cost of attendance between $3,200 and $6,500. And you never hear it come up on the recruiting trail. So, you know, the reports of this being the end of the world are not accurate. I mean, the enterprise has proven to be very flexible and you know, the fact is there will be people that use this to cheat. There'll be inducements that are they're illegal now, impermissible now, and they'll be impermissible in the new day. but that doesn't mean there won't be institutions that do it. And so, you know, it's you're not going to eradicate bad actors. That's for sure. But the time has come when some things that have been previously impermissible are now going to be permitted. And, you know, it sort of makes compliance officers' heads explode. But there are some things we're just going to have to let go of. And there, you know, you may have a kid driving a new car around campus because they've developed a relationship with a car dealer where they're a spokesperson, or they're going to do autograph sessions every once in a while, or they're, you know, there, it could be a lot of things in the relationship. But this is intended to have disclosure. The institution, the student athlete has to file paperwork with the institution to let them know what they're doing. It's not an approval process, but it's an acknowledgement that they have a deal. Who's in on the deal? Who's representing them? How much are they getting paid? How long does it last? Those kinds of things need to be on file with the institution. And so, you know, we're going to have to, this is going to be an evolving environment for several years to come. And it will just become a part of the way college athletics operates. But it's important that we separate that which is institutional intellectual property and what is student athlete intellectual property. And, you know, those things are, you know, we're going to have to find our way on that a little bit.
Yeah. Like a GoFundMe. I mean, should a kid be able to open a GoFundMe and say, hey, fans, if you like me, pour money into my GoFundMe.
Yeah, they actually can't do that under the NCAA plan. But they could do a GoFundMe for a disaster in the area, or for a charity, or for an elementary school that's trying to raise money, or those kinds of things. I don't think we're going to be willing to live with, I'm going to do a GoFundMe page for my little sister's rehab, or, you know, because my dad just got laid off. I don't know that those kinds of things are envisioned as being permissible, but, you know, there are a lot of things that are, that weren't permissible before.
Is this in some ways a blessing, Commissioner, because you've got a model right now that's an amateur model. Athletic departments are tax exempt. Student athletes are not going to be seen as employees with name, image, likeness, yet they are going to be able to reap some benefit for their level of Q rating in their sports world with their fans. Does that kind of alleviate some of the pressure that has come with escalating coaching salaries, yet not, you know, no compensation other than the scholarship for the student athlete?
Yeah, well, you know, coaching compensation, commissioner compensation, there's
TV revenue for the
individuals that are making a lot of money in this space. And, you know, I'm not sure that it's really fair to compare a coach who spent his entire career working to get to where they are compared to an 18 to 22 year old. I think that's what college athletics is about. I think it's us helping 18-year-old adolescents become 22-year-old adults, and in the process have a good athletic experience and get a good education. I think that's fundamentally what it's about. It's been made out to be something other than that, but in the main, for the vast majority of student athletes, that's what it is. It's about a 4-year or 5-year period where you can get a great experience. And now you're going to have a chance to make a little money, but this is not intended to be a profession. It's not intended to be an employee-employer relationship. It's easy to make that comparison. Well, the coach is making lots of money and the poor student athletes not getting anything. Well, you know, a full scholarship with all the benefits at the University of Texas is higher than the median income in the state of Texas. And so, you know, it's to say that student athletes don't have a pretty good lot in life. Most students on campus would trade places with them in a heartbeat. And so, you know, I think this is just another step towards permissibility. And you know, it's intended to be not a gift. I mean, there are those who are being told, oh, well, you've got 40,000 followers on Instagram. It's worth X number of dollars. Well, it doesn't work that way. You're going to have to be willing to produce content and to do it all the time so that people can get their appetite satisfied for the content. And it's a lot of work. I have a daughter-in-law that's a fashion influencer on in a variety of different modalities, and she works 80 hours a week on it. And so it's not just saying, well, I got some followers, I'm gonna really make a lot of money. It doesn't exactly work that way.
Is there anything else, Commissioner, that you think is important for people to understand with regard to either NIL or the 12 team expanded college football playoff proposal?
Well, relative to the latter, the playoff, I think we have a good plan. Now we have to go about the process of ascertaining how we can execute it. And that's going to take a little time. Relative to NIL, I've been involved in it up to my ears. And I have gone through a transition. I began to say at the beginning, well, okay, we're going to move incrementally from where we are now, and we'll only go so far as we start getting uncomfortable. I quickly got to the point when we were diving into all this stuff that I really am of the belief that the time has come for this to be liberalized, and that we need to acknowledge that student athletes have a life outside of their athletics. They're not completely divorced from one another, and as they use their name, image, and likeness, their prominence as an athlete is certainly going to come into play. But some of the things that were previously impermissible are now going to be permissible, and it's going to drive some people crazy to say, "Oh well, I gotta know what they're doing, and I gotta know how much they're getting, and there must be something going on because he's driving a nicer car than he should be." And you know, those things are going to be divulged to the institution. And there are steps to be taken if student athletes are not doing it properly. And this is going to be a long evolutionary process, but I think the time has come that this is an appropriate step forward. And we're all just going to have to take a deep breath and look at, right now we have lots of different state laws. They aren't all the same. I expect we'll have an NCAA policy by July 1st. But there are going to be no lives lost on July 1st. It's going to be a long evolutionary process, and there'll be modifications along the way.
There he is, Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, the voice of reason in college athletics. Commissioner, really appreciate the time today. My goodness, from COVID-19 to the expanded college football playoff proposal to name, image, and likeness, no shortage of to-dos on your to-do list. Thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been bored, Chip.
Yeah, you need to be able to just lay on the couch and just watch your favorite movies TV marathon.
Maybe one of these days.
Man, it's good stuff. Thanks so much to Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby. For the commissioner, I am Chip Brown. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Flagship Podcast. Until next time, stay safe and keep the faith.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.